Okay, so Sudan Special. On April 15th, 2023, clashes broke out in Sudan. In the capital, one side...
Roughly, it says, according to the BBC, is 56 civilians are dead so far.
According to this Wikipedia, 56 civilians are dead so far.
Why are we using Wikipedia? It's not Wikipedia, I'm using BBC.
60, actually.
I'm not using Wikipedia.
Wikipedia is the best.
Sure, okay. Sudanese capital has seen battles between Sudanese armed forces and militia groups known as Janjaweed.
Yeah, they go by the RSF, so a lot of reporting is going to have them listed as the RSF, but the reason we recognize them as Janjaweed is because Janjaweed is responsible for genocide. And like Facebook, they changed their name to Meta to try to get away with it and try to sound more professional. So recognizing them as Janjaweed recognizes that it's the same group that has been committing massacres against the people of Sudan since their formation in what, the 70s? 1987. But even before that, they were first armed by Gaddafi. And it was Gaddafi, he called it the Arab Legion. And it was basically just all bullshit because he was backing them to, because he read like a lot of communist ideas. So like he was trying to take like the template of communism where it's like you uplift like the farmers, you know? So that's kind of his thinking, is he arms the tribal groups and they'll overthrow the government and then put him in charge. But then they found oil, and that basically ends Gaddafi's influence in there, because Chevron comes in and Chevron starts arming these militants. And then China really comes in when basically they get sanctioned and everyone is like, hey, you kind of like can't work in this country if you're an American company. So China comes in, China starts arming all these people. To this day, most of their guns are going to be from China. We did a little Christopher Hitchens episode where he blames the Darfur genocide on China, even though it's a longer history than that. And now today, because of our sanctions, Russia is their main arms dealer. And what is it? They refer to it as like the arms dump of Africa or something. What is it?
It was the arms dump, which doesn't help in a country that's had multiple civil wars in two decades.
Yeah, so it's a coup attempt every decade for 60 years. Ace, so you want to tell us about Janjaweed?
Yeah, so Janjaweed is basically an assortment of Arab, specifically Arab tribal militias within Sudan. And their name, it's kind of a unique etymology on the name, is that it literally translates to like devil riders or devils on horses, demons on horses, whatever term you want to use. But in reality, the term can also just mean horsemen, because that is originally how they used to come into areas. It's like they used to come in on horse with guns, and it's like it may sound a little like cartoony and ridiculous, but they were wreaking havoc in a lot of these non-Arab villages and even Arab villages. Again, another thing that people need to understand about Janjaweed is that a lot of their quote unquote, like what you would call a common foot soldier in there, has also had like, you know, relatives killed by other opposing militias in Sudan that are non-Arab or Arab, or killed by government forces in the fighting. So a lot of them are, in a lot of ways, disaffected. Then what happened is a big reason that this whole thing, if we want to call it that, in Sudan is even happening, is because the plan of the new Sudanese government was to integrate them into the Sudanese military, and they give them a new name, the Rapid Support Forces, and, you know, outfit them with Toyotas and newer weapons and newer body armor and all this. And that was kind of a key point for peace to finally come about in the country. But obviously it has failed, and Janjaweed is giving them hell right now, as they kind of have for the last, like, God knows how many years in Sudan.
I remember back when I was reporting on this, when it was like, it was kind of, I don't remember. It had to be after 2013, because they were already being called RSF. But they were already kind of turning on the government at that point. And like it, they were getting so powerful that they were in opposition to the government at the time when I wrote about them a long, long time ago. There kind of has always been this idea that Janjaweed is like the rightful ruler of Sudan. And that's certainly grown until 2019, because that's when the new government comes in and they basically just go out and they massacre civilians in 2019. It's kind of like a kind of sort of comparable to like an Arab Spring repression, where these people right. who come out pro-democracy and then government gunmen who are like, you know, and also if you talk to like some of these guys that you'll see at the head of Janjaweed, they'll be like, that's not us. We were never Janjaweed. Those were the other guys who were doing all the killing and raping. Right. That wasn't us at all. We didn't do that.
To kind of give it a comparative situation, it's very similar to a lot of the militias that are running around Libya today. And I mean, as we know,
Janjaweed is even in Libya, kind of.
Yeah, and they have kind of like in recent years, between the war in Yemen and what's gone on in Libya, kind of expanded, we'll call it their business to like the mercenary front,
a semi-state security formation. Yeah.
Saudi Arabia will employ them to fight in Yemen, or like Haftar's forces will employ them to fight in Libya. And it's very much the same brand of kind of like heavily armed tribal militia that kind of locks down. Like if you recall in Libya, they had those militias that were solely there for the purpose of securing oil facilities. And they're kind of a similar brand, maybe a little bit more like a little less organized. But at the same time, it's a very similar, if not the same, brand of militia.
It's the modern day horse archer.
Yeah. You know, I had a friend, a Sudanese friend, who called them like the golden horde of Sudan.
Yeah.
Kind of like the mom.
I was thinking more of the Cree, they're the first ones who like do bow cavalry in America,
right?
And like they like were so successful before like the buffalo died out in Canada and stuff.
Yeah, and this is another important thing to remember is like in a like a military sense, at least within the country of Sudan, it's a little different in Yemen and Libya, but in the country of Sudan, they're actually a very successful fighting force, like militarily speaking. Which is part of the reason why they've accrued all this power up until this point is that they're pretty good at what they do, which is fight.
I've been looking stuff up while you guys have been talking.
What have you looked up?
nothing that we haven't covered. I haven't had that much time.
Oh yeah, you can also
7 minutes.
You can also look.
I am listening. I'm just sort of looking up what's happening at the moment.
So just to kind of get into like what's currently happening in Sudan at the moment, just expanding into it more, is I just got like an AP news update that the doctor syndicate in Sudan, which is basically like a union of doctors in Sudan and like a spokes group for doctors in Sudan, has said that 60 people in the city of Khartoum, the capital of Sudan, have been killed, and another 600 have been injured or wounded, right? And so what we know so far is that they've managed to get into the Khartoum airport, the main airport there, doing what we're not exactly sure. It seems like they've blown up some planes that don't really have anyone in them. That might just be collateral damage from all the fighting. And yeah, they've taken over some air bases that are used by Egyptian soldiers, and have taken some Egyptian soldiers captive. So that's kind of like where people are kind of seeing like, okay, how's Egypt gonna like handle this situation now that Egyptian soldiers, Egyptian citizens have been captured? It seems like Egypt, given that the EU has threatened them with sanctioning if they involve themselves in the conflict, seems as though Egypt is gonna try and go the diplomatic route about this. And Janjaweed, or the Rapid Support Forces, are kind of assuring Egypt at this point in time that like, hey, we're not gonna harm any Egyptian soldiers. We're not gonna like do anything like that. We're willing to do a prisoner exchange, and like, you know, it's in the works over in Egypt that they're gonna send diplomats over to Sudan to try and like get the peaceful return of Egyptian soldiers and pilots. And yeah, there was a lot of speculation kind of like when this, within the first hour or a couple hours of this news dropping, that like Egypt is going to kind of come in there guns blazing, which right now, just based on what we're seeing, doesn't seem likely. It kind of seems like there's going to be like a diplomatic handover of Egyptian prisoners by John Jaweed to the Egyptian government. And
well, we saw planes flying around. I'm assuming that that was the Sudanese Air Force.
Yeah,
I'm
there not was, even sure. There has been MiGs, stuff. And that's what I was going to say, is how many of these people have been injured by stuff like that, by MiGs bombing? Because I've seen a video where it's like an airstrike directly on a building, and there's just like somebody filming on the street, and an airstrike hits a building, because they probably don't have precision guided bombs or anything like that.
They're definitely dumb bombs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just reading the ABC article here, and it says that the doctors' union said
also
that
like
airstrikes...
Janjaweed is like missile trucks and stuff, and I haven't seen any of that type of gear. Actually, they did a video at the airport, and they were blurring the back of a truck, so they might have missile trucks in the airport. So, there's like a ties to like the Egyptian Brotherhood or something.
The Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt?
It says the Egyptian Brotherhood.
The Egyptian Brotherhood, yeah. So just to give some background information, the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt often seen as distinct.
Okay.
Oh, they're just kind of seen as distinct because of their influence, because of the money that's there, because of they're the kind of the original Muslim Brotherhood, right? So it's like they operate differently. So oftentimes you'll see the Egyptian Brotherhood, aka like the Egyptian version of the Brotherhood, be categorized as differently from other branches of the Muslim Brotherhood in, say, Turkey or Malaysia or wherever, just because they do business differently. They're kind of they're a bit more resourceful. They have a bit more resources at their fingertips, stuff like that. So in this case, I'd imagine the linking goes way back, like pre-2013.
It says how do you pronounce the leader's name? Burhan. It's a rumor that he studied in Egypt and has like ties to them.
That could very well be possible, because if we're talking pre-2013, especially, the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt was still like Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood was still extremely influential, and they were training and educating all sorts of people. You know, like if you look at a lot of, you know, leaders, even like MBZ, Mohammed bin Zayed in the UAE, a lot of his high school teachers were Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, which just goes to show you their reach at the time. They were heavily involved in education in the Arab world. They kind of had like a monopoly over like Islamic education, over like historical education, like literary education in the Arabic language. So pre-2013, particularly like throughout the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood just held a lot of influence and, you know, and a lot of money. If you look at a lot of important people in the Middle East, North Africa, the Arab world today, a lot of their education can be traced back to that. Some imprint of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood has been left on them just because of how much educational influence they had way back when.
So I also wanted to say that probably an under-discussed point is that there's no evidence that it's going to transfer to a civilian government, even with the protests and the massacres, but the thing is that Janjaweed is actually afraid of prosecution for war crimes, because the previous leader of Sudan they helped bring down, and he's now on trial for war crimes. So because they are affiliated with the genocide in Darfur, they are affiliated with massacres against the people. They are kind of like in a Donald Trump situation where they're trying to cling to power to get away with crimes.
Right. And the thing with Janjaweed is like it's kind of similar to Abdullah Saleh in Yemen and Gaddafi in Libya, where it's like they don't really have anywhere to run. You know, it's not like Mubarak in Egypt, where he could just like fuck off to Switzerland or France, or, you know, the guy in Tunisia, Ben Ali, I think.
There's also, I think, like the Uganda guy, didn't he die in Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, these guys don't really have anywhere that's going to be like, yeah, we'll give you asylum, no problem. They don't really have anywhere like that. So for them, at least like just from my speculation here, they don't have a way out. It's either they find a way to keep doing what they're doing and keep their influence in Sudan, or they're gonna end up in The Hague, and it's kind of do or die for them.
Okay.
So Wagner.
Yeah, Jack, what do you got?
I'm just reading up on Wagner's connection to this group.
Specifically Janjaweed?
Yeah, specifically them. Yeah. I found something from the Australian Institute for International Affairs.
Is it a training connection? Like, what is it? Like, were they training these guys? Were they assisting them financially? Were they giving them arms? Is it a little bit of everything?
It seems like Wagner was actually involved with a lot of propaganda efforts in Sudan during the genocide. Wagner Groups, this is the Australian Institute for International Affairs, says they reinforced existing conflicts, assisting the authoritarian regime to resist attempts to democratization, typical Russia. It just seems like they did pretty much the same thing they do everywhere, which is provide security for a shit cunt of a person to do some really, really bad shit, if not directly participating in it. They started operating in 2017 in Sudan.
Wagner came in 2017. Yeah. What we also have to keep in mind is that the Central African Republic is on the border there.
Mm.
So there still is a conflict in Darfur. It has not ended. So, and also, like I was talking about this earlier, is it's like, why did the conflict in Darfur start? There's no oil there.
Hmm. Holy shit. Wagner, like, apparently,
what was the point
also
of the genocide there?
If I'm not mistaken, there was oil in Darfur, or at least there was a belief that there was oil there.
That's what I was thinking is that it's literally all these people are displaced because they wanted to survey the ground beneath them.
It was a like, genocide no for maybe there's oil. It's literally a genocide for maybe there's oil. But apparently Wagner pivoted to work with the coup to get him out. So they're just playing their cards. They're just there to be a disrupting influence.
Oh, that's to get Bashir to Bashir like. Out. Russia helped them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. I would assume a lot of people, because if you watch Al Jazeera's coverage, like there's not going to be any coverage that's going to be pro Janjaweed, but like Al Jazeera obviously is super anti Janjaweed. So that's probably where like most of, because they have reporters on the ground affiliated with Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera has a lot of press resources in the country, so that's probably where most of the information is going to come from. But like basically what I'm saying is I don't think that the Qatari government bias really matters in this situation.
No,
when it comes to reporting from them. Also Janjaweed is from Darfur, aren't they?
Janjaweed is, again, it's like I was saying earlier, they're a collection of different Arab tribal militias.
I mean the leader right now specifically, I think
leader,
he's from Darfur.
I couldn't tell you that for sure, but he could be, yes.
Hemeti, the leader, Hemeti, what they call him.
So Janjaweed
Wagner. He's from the Rizegat tribe of Darfur.
Okay.
So I'm just reading that Janjaweed and Wagner were shipped into Libya.
Yep. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And Yemen.
12 buses of Wagner and Janjaweed mercenaries arrived at an airbase in northern Libya in sometime. It doesn't give me a date because this is shit journalism. So, but yeah, so that's interesting. So they're pretty heavily
intertwined. It says before he was recruited, he traded camels prior to the war. He was just a simple camel trader. And now he's about to run. Now he's basically one of the de facto leaders of a country. How about that for a rags to riches story? Also, it says that apparently that the elites are prejudiced against him because he's from Darfur and has no formal education.
Sounds about right. I think it's a very fitting origin story for this guy. If you kind of look at like the quote unquote, like brand of Janjaweed, you know, it's a lot of these horse a lot of these tribal people who, you know, for them, a way of life, for like in a real sense, is trading camels. And you know, their access to horses and camels is what makes them powerful in the first place. As like insane as that sounds, that was their main mode of transportation and getting around throughout the like the civil conflict in Darfur. And this, I'm glad you got into this. Kind of goes into the classified in Sudan between the urban population, the urban Arab population, and the tribal Arab population, which is like it's like when people think it's all ethnic, it's really
Especially in the West, they simplified it too because it was going on while Iraq was going on. So it was very much of Muslims killing black Christians type of thing in the West. Very simplified to that. And it's like the Arabs were suffering too. The tribal Arabs were getting it just as hard.
That's how John Jaweed was able to recruit so well, is because a lot of these tribal Arab like young men kind of felt like they were getting shit on. I mean, literally, you know, we're talking about people who had their like entire families torn from them, like that were either killed in the conflict or, you know, killed in the conflict, badly wounded in the conflict, you know, raped. This is their way of fighting back in a lot of ways. And it's, you know, John Jaweed, 100%, as much as they may have problems with like the, you know, African black Christians in Sudan, they've also got their problems with the urban Arab elite in Khartoum, which is kind of culminated in what we're seeing right now.
So
the damn elites.
I was just looking here that in 2017, he took over a bunch of gold mines, and his brother basically runs the gold company in Sudan. So he has control over the gold trade, and that's how he's able to like have so much influence and power.
Oh, so he has even more leverage than we thought.
Yeah. It says investment mining, transport, car rental, iron and steel is this company that his brother runs. That's what they do. It's called Al Junaid,
yeah. I'm assuming.
One of the richest men in Sudan. He's extremely powerful because like he basically has his brother running the gold, and gold is everything right now. Because this guy has control of gold too, that it's probably wrapped up in with Uganda in their gold trade. Because gold is all that matters right now. Like it used to be diamonds and shit like that, but gold is the big conflict resource you want right now. Mm. Not even oil. Gold is what you want.
Good. People realize that diamonds are worthless. They're shiny carbon rocks.
Because remember that it's like, I think Uganda, I think they didn't produce gold and they were like the biggest players in the gold trade for a while. I think now they do have a gold mine, and like so it was promised that the people were going to have all these riches because the gold mine came. And the same thing happened to the people in Sudan. They said that they were going to give them 2% on the oil wells when they go into these places, but there's no audit. There's no, you know, there's no nobody there to make sure that the funds that they check are actually getting 2% or where the funds go. There's nobody monitoring the money. So, of course, it doesn't show up. They're just literally robbing the oil out from underneath these people and giving them nothing in return. And like they don't even have clean water, and they're sitting right next to an oil depot. And the only people that the oil depot employs are the Chinese.
Is it a Chinese oil platform?
China runs all the oil.
Oh, what a surprise. Yeah. I bet you it's a part of the Belt and Road Initiative.
Well, also,
bet you it is.
That's
what's
that
it
also,
called? I'm going to look it up.
What? Oh, it's the Unity oil well. Unity oil well is the bad one. And that's going to be the main one where you're going to see like China's influence there. But they run all the oil there, and it's an oil refining state. So it is really important. That is more of in the South now. Because the South is the one that had the oil. That's what the war was about, is controlling that oil. And with the East African Union, they want to, because the oil pipelines go through Sudan and go to the Red Sea, which benefits, you know, like Saudi Arabia and everyone who uses the Red Sea, Egypt as well, because they control the shipping lane there. So the East African, the reason why South Sudan is part of the East African Pact is because they're going to build pipelines on the other side and basically cut Sudan off from these rich oil wells. But there's a civil war.
It's Russian. It's Russian.
The Unity well is Russian now?
It's Russian.
It was Chinese for a while.
It's a joint venture between Nile Petroleum and Safinat, which is Russia's oil refinery thing. That's the refinery, not the actual field, which was discovered by Chevron.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the refineries are where Sudan is. So that's the thing is that they need these countries in the East African Pact that want to build these pipelines. The pipelines run through refineries. So basically they made sure that even though South Sudan was going to get liberation, they would still be in on that. But obviously because of this, Sudan's oil economy is not as reliable as its gold economy, which is probably really important to why Janjaweed has so much power now.
We want to go into Wagner a bit more or
about Wagner?
Look, it's very scarce. Like the information's very,
it tends to
very
be
few and far between. But that tends to be the what we find with Wagner stuff. You have to dig pretty fucking deep to find stuff.
I bet you there's some North Korea stuff going on in here too.
Interesting. I guess we'll look into it and we'll cover it on an episode where we go a bit deeper. Because I'm sure we could find someone that's Sudanese that we can talk to.
I mean, Ace could probably go up to some stranger and be like, "What do you think? What's going on here?"
I could right now, but like it's like, you know, I don't want to be rude about it. You know, these guys they're professionals. I don't want to.
Professional what?
Working.
Just like working yeah. Professionals.
So that's the thing is that like especially with refugees and refugee camps, like a lot of the people like around here, the Sudanese guys do moving companies and trucking and stuff.
So here they do a lot of the same.
Yeah. So they'll also be like managers of like warehouse stores like Costco's.
Oh, you know what's crazy is this is something I've noticed with Sudanese like kind of all over the world. I've heard like this from friends in Saudi Arabia. Like here they do medical transportation, trucking, all mm-hmm. that warehouses. In Saudi they do the same. In Egypt they do a lot of the same too.
Like every time I've moved and I've hired like movers myself, like because like I the last time my dad just like paid some dudes who worked at Home Depot, but like whenever I like, you know, look up in like the actual business section to find movers, they always end up being two Sudanese guys.
Yup.
And you can tell one of them doesn't even speak English as well. And so,
it's funny, it's completely different here. The movers are all Kiwis, all islanders.
Well, yeah, because Australia has a large Sudan refugee population.
I mean, yeah, it's big, but I couldn't even tell you where all the Sudanese immigrants have actually gone for work. I couldn't even tell you. But that's probably just because most of what we hear is our Sudanese immigrants are beating people up again. That's all you hear on the news. They really don't like them here.
It's strange when countries like Australia are anti-immigrant because it's like...
Anti-immigrant?
That's yeah. you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, mate, it's very strange. It's the fucking Lebos, man. It's the fucking Lebos.
That's the fucking... It's also, the fobs, mate. Fucking fobs.
Since we're talking about this, this also all stems as one of the things that is Britain's fault.
Oh, you mean everything?
Yeah. So Britain totally did a Rwanda thing. Britain and Egypt, but it was mostly Britain.
Hey, incoming fifth gen Let Them Eat Cake film recommendation. There's a movie called Khartoum. It's an old movie that basically like goes over this whole thing. It's good too. It's a good movie. Check it out if you're listening to this.
But yeah, they did the divide and conquer type tactics. So they made the South Christian and then they like paid for madrasas and stuff in the North. So just like how the Rwanda shit happened because the British made divides where they didn't exist.
The Mahdist revolt. It is very similar. It is like Sudan's modern.
I was saying that there a while back before Britain came, like they cleansed all the corners.
You want to get into the Mahdist revolt?
I just saw it briefly in passing that a long time ago they went through and they kicked all the foreigners out, but then Britain came and then the Cold War happened and the Cold War, basically, the Cold War is just when arms start flooding in.
Money laundering scheme.
And like, because each side was backing each side. And then, you know, when oil gets discovered, it's more at the end of the Cold War, when because of Russia's presence in Libya and the Central African Republic, they're naturally... See, that's what I was curious about, is like who his main backers would be outside of the country, because inside the country, they say that he can't be a ruler because he's an uneducated savage, basically. Like, he would not be able to get the political elites behind him to rule the country. And technically, he's the vice president. So it's like the president and the vice president fighting. Isn't this like isn't that like Metal Gear Rising or Revengeance? What was that one? Isn't that what happens? The vice president starts fighting the president. Isn't that the story? The one where you
I've only played Metal Gear Solid 5, and I've only played like 15 minutes of it.
I'm pretty
Real
sure.
Gamer boy.
I'm pretty sure that's what happens. So
probably
the thing is that there's no way in hell that they think they're going to be able to take power. So I think the description of this being a coup attempt is kind of silly, because
What's the end goal? What do you reckon the end goal is?
They got to be getting leverage to get like immunity for war crimes and like stuff like that.
On top of that, it seems like it's a display of power. It's kind of showing the central, like the Sudanese government, that it's like, hey, we can make your world even worse than it already fucking is whenever we want. So, you know, you guys need to give us some concessions just within the country.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it seems like. It seems like that, or it seems like they're just trying to do it to sort of say, hey, we're here, don't fuck around.
Yeah, it's not going to be like a Tigray thing.
Mm.
You know, where they have like... Actually, they have like old, because he is a member of the old guard as well. He has more claims to the old guard than like the current leader, who was like out training in Jordan for most of the time and then came over and overthrew the country. We also have this whole element where Wagner is getting pissed at Russia and saying that they're going to change their main focus to Africa again. So a lot of people have been seen kind of like where there's smoke, there's fire, and saying that this is like Russia's responsibility. There's no evidence of that. There could be, but I wouldn't put too much weight in this being like something that's going to matter when it comes to like the Ukraine conflict or anything like that. I think this is going to be basically mostly contained to Sudan and Egypt. Ethiopia also is there to back the current regime. And also, like, Sudan has a really powerful military. Like, for Africa, they're one of the better militaries there. They actually, I think they even like export force into Somalia for stability in Somalia. They're one of the forces that help there.
And?
Yeah, the Sudanese military. Yeah. So that's a pretty big power extension. Like, they aren't just like some African poor country. They are a powerhouse in the region.
They've definitely got their extension of influence over there. And I feel like, again, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the comments we see on this stuff. Guys and girls who are listening, this is real life. People are not used to planes flying overhead their apartment building, you know, in any country. That's a traumatic experience regardless. And this isn't some like small fish, just like John was saying, some small fish African country where some stupid ass war is going on. No, this isn't the normal. This is a huge development. And this is going to have consequences for the future. Because Sudan, whether you like it or not, is a regional power. Every country tends to think of themselves as such. And Sudan, given its size and given its resources, is a regional power. Like, this isn't some write-off conflict. It's not. No conflict really is, but yeah.
It may not be an extended long war, but it's definitely going to be a significant short one, if nothing else.
Yeah, there's just the characterization of it being a coup and a civil war. I mean, I might eat my words tomorrow, but as of right now, I don't see that going on. I think the hostages are kind of like, I'm used to seeing people grab hostages for negotiations, you know, like that's typical shit. I think that's one of the main things that are going on, is that they're going to try, because like, another thing is just like the Nile River flows through Sudan. So it's like Egypt has to be involved there no matter what, because you know, they could be like Ethiopia and like have a situation where they're going to build a dam or something.
I say it loud and clear. They'll blow up that dam.
Take it easy there, Trump.
I think that's pretty much
Sorry.
I don't know why we're throwing this at the end here.
So long, Bowser.
But there it is.